This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Stephanie Officer. The peace plan for Gaza provides an outline for its future. It could mean that more than 2 million people living there would be under international control, not Israel's. The hostages would be released, Hamas would disarm, aid would come in, and there would be phased withdrawal of Israeli troops and reconstruction of Gaza could start. ABC's Mary Bruce.
Arab leaders are now welcoming this plan. French President Macron says Hamas has no choice but to accept it. But Hamas has yet to formally respond to this, but it does seem unlikely that they will accept this plan. It certainly falls far short of the full Israeli withdrawal that Hamas has been seeking.
Longtime couple Nicole Kidman and Keith Urban have split. The Oscar-winning actress and country singer have been married since 2006 and share two daughters together, ages 17 and 14. A source reportedly said Kidman did not want the separation and has been working to keep the family together. The pair have been reportedly living separately since the beginning of the summer. This is ABC News.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 107.7 WRCE.
Disappointment in OT. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports from Dallas, where the Packers kicked a 34-yard field goal as time expired in overtime to end with a 40-40 tie with the Dallas Cowboys. Head coach Matt LaFleur's reaction after the game.
It's disappointing. Just too many critical mistakes that led to that tie, and that really bit us in the butt.
Running back Josh Jacobs scored two touchdowns. I asked him at his locker what it felt like ending in a tie.
Weird, honestly. That's the only way I can really explain it. I think the stuff before the half, we kind of like shot ourselves in the foot with.
Baseball. The Brewers came back to win 4-2 over the Reds Sunday. Their crew finished the regular season with 97 wins, a new franchise record.
You know, I'm glad that this team gets to be remembered differently. I'm not into records necessarily, but it's a way for 2025 to be recognized differently.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Matt Nair on air.
The borders are. Tom Holman was investigated for accepting $50,000 from undercover FBI agents.
50 grand in a fast food bag as a payoff. If Kamala Harris would have accepted a fast food bag full of fast food, it would have been congressional hearings, yes. 24 hours on every network, yep, that hated them.
It's corruption palooza, man. Yeah.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Fun weekend. Wow, what a fun weekend. Trump on Truth Social shared a video, great video of him, supposedly a Fox News video, of him in the Oval, I guess him in the White House, and promising that every American will soon receive their MedBed card, that'll give them access to this new MedBed hospitals. And if you don't know what MedBed is, I know some cute kooks who think that there's this futuristic technology where all you have to do is it's where rich people get to go and well-connected people and, you know, people who eat babies and stuff. But it's this thing that can reverse any disease, regenerate limbs, de-age people. It can do a lot of things. Now, there's no such thing. But my Q friends believe this is how they've kept John F. Kennedy Jr. alive. How, you remember how he was going to show up at Dealey Plaza and he was going to run with Trump? And remember all that craziness? Of course you don't, because we've got the attention span of gnats. But yeah, he shared a video of that. Of himself promising MedBed access. Also, FBI agents. There were 274 FBI agents in January 6th who were probably causing the insurrection, probably acting as agitators and insurrectionists. went after Christopher Wray, kind of compared him to James Comey. So yay, fun there. Also, Portland. evidently, Portland is another war-torn area in the country. He put out on Truth Social that his Secretary of War would give anything he wanted, all the necessary troops, to protect the war-ravaged Portland, which was fun to watch on social media as people, you know, took videos of themselves riding bikes and in parks and, you know, beautiful scenery and, you know, war-ravaged. And they're going to go after Antifa. They're finally going to go after Antifa. And what he's done is he's authorized full force. Not quite sure what full force is, but yeah, we're going to use full force against Portland. So look out, Portland. Also, government shutdown coming probably this week. Trump has said that there will be widespread layoffs, firings. He said, we're going to cut a lot of people. And we're able to cut on a permanent basis. So here we go again. Fat cats in D.C. playing the same old games with our livelihoods, with working people. This isn't them and their country clubs. This is Trump and the GOP swinging the threats around like kids breaking toys. Except the toys are real people's lives, paychecks, their families. They don't care. What happens to working people? They don't care if you put food on the table, a roof over your head. They don't care. All they want is pawns in their little political war. And the collateral damage, that's you and me. They don't care. They don't care that they're tearing down government because they want to, so that their billionaire buddies can swoop in and carve it up and cut it up and cash in on it. So be real about what's happening. Trump says if there's a shutdown, he's going to make thousands of working people pay. Permanent cuts. You may never work again. That means families thrown into chaos. That means mortgages unpaid, kids not going to college. That means a lot of bad things for working people, and they don't care. It's also they can privatize, profitize, and line their pockets. Mail delivery, benefits, health care, safety checks, you name it. They want to sell it off. They want to chop it off. They want to deregulate it. And what makes me sick is how casually they act about this, how they throw this around. Trump struts in front of cameras saying he doesn't want to fire people, but he's waving the knife like a threat. And it's working people that he's threatening. Meanwhile, he'll be fine no matter what happens. He's still a billionaire. May cash it in. He's never had such a sweet, sweet gig. He's never missed a paycheck. But those working families, they're screwed. We're the ones who keep this country running. The planes don't take off without working people. Social Security checks don't get out without working people. And we have an administration doing everything that they can do to treat us like garbage. Sad, sad stuff. Want to hear your thoughts? Happy about it? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back with Sarah Burris.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, another weekend of nothing to talk about. Another boring weekend. Another another weekend of where, you know, it was just sunny outside on Sunday. It was a nice day. Walk in the park. Nothing to see. Move along. No talk of invading cities. No, you know, losing people in immigration systems. No, people promoting violence and hate. No more shootings. It was a perfect, blissful weekend. And if you believe any of that, well, you know, good for you. Look, I want to know what it is you're taking or what bubble you're in, because, well, all of that stuff happened. And here to share some thoughts on, well, what this all means and where we go from here, I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris, reporter at Raw Story, rawstory.com, to come share in some of the evil. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how are you?
I got to be honest. I looked at Portland, and I know I have a friend who lives in Portland, and it didn't look like it was burning. It didn't look like it was a dumpster fire. It didn't look like it was war ravaged. Didn't look like anything that my Republican friends were saying. It didn't look like anything that our Secretary of War could send drones. Are we gonna? This is the thing. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where we are.
I think the worst thing that could be happening in Portland is an outbreak of man buns. That is probably the worst possible idea. Maybe flannel makes a return. Dudes in grass skirts. Like, I've seen pictures of what's actually going on in Portland, and I don't understand it. I had a bunch of friends who marked themselves as safe from the outbreak of the war in Portland on the Facebook this weekend. So I don't understand this. This sort of, it's kind of like what happened in Washington, where basically they just decided one day, oh, this is going to be the city that we think is the most dangerous and we're going to go after it.
But what happened to Chicago? I thought we were going to Chicago. I thought Chicago, look, I love Chicago. Great pizza, good people. We've got an affiliate there. Look, I love Chicago. I thought we were going there.
I thought we were too. I think it actually is kind of stuck in some litigation. I think you've got some people that are fighting back on it.
Yeah, but why does it, you know, the president does whatever he wants. He doesn't care about the courts or litigation. He's the president. He wants to send the Department of War into one of our cities. By God, Rand Paul says he's got the right to do it as long as he's protecting federal buildings. And, you know, some weird other verbiage, but Rand Paul's on board.
Yeah, that's the weird thing about Rand Paul is you're like, weren't you supposed to be the libertarian guy? But yeah. Again, this is where we are. I think it would be, you know, interesting if I think what we anticipated would happen is that Trump would essentially go to war with the state of Illinois because the governor was really like, bring it on, bro. Like, I'm ready to fight you. And so I'm not sure if that's the reason that he's kind of holding back, and this whole Portland thing was more of like a surprise National Guard deployment, like a drive-by deployment kind of thing. Maybe that's what's happening. Yeah. But again, like, Rand Paul was super excited about talking about how Chicago was a war zone, and it's like, well, then why aren't you there?
Yeah, no, he said it was one of the worst places he's been to those areas, that those bad areas.
Yeah, right.
And what got me, and this is the weird part, because, look, there are bad areas just about everywhere. You can go into any major city, and there's going to be poverty-riddled areas where you have desperation, and where you have desperation, you have crime. And yet, I don't see Republicans doing anything to make the economy better for working people, especially the working poor in those areas. So it seems to me that, you know, if you want to solve some of the problems that are in every city in this country, maybe you start with poverty. Maybe you start going back and figuring out how to undo some of the damage that Republicans have done over the last several decades in destroying our social safety net. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm just throwing it out as an idea. Maybe that's a start.
No, you're absolutely right. There have been decades and decades of studies and polling and focus groups and things that we have researched forever, showing that people who have, you know, good jobs, people who have safe housing, people who can pay their bills and who, you know, are happy with their school system, there's low crime. There's, you know, it's things are not as bad. And, you know, when the economy is good, people are happy. And so people don't need to, you know, shoot other people.
So let me ask you, because he says in his Truth over on his social media platform, Truth Social, that our Secretary of War, Hegseth, is directed to provide all necessary troops to protect war-ravaged Portland and any of our ICE facilities under siege from attack by Antifa and other domestic terrorists, but Antifa. So I'm curious, who's Antifa? I mean, because I've asked a couple of people that I have a little respect for, not a lot. Who do you, because of the red hat, you know, who's Antifa? And they're like, oh, you know. And I'm like, no, I don't. It turns out in my world, and this you may agree, you may disagree, but it turns out it's, the consensus that I got from my red hat brigade was Antifa's black people.
Oh my God, seriously?
It's code word. Dog whistle for those people. Like in Chicago, like in Philadelphia, like in, go to Cleveland, any major, Detroit, any major city, kind of dog whistle.
Yeah, that's what, I mean, I'm hearing the urban city center kind of thing too, but I mean, the majority of the people that the red hats that I hear from Antifa is Portland, it's Seattle, you know, it's the left coast kind of people. But again, like the thing that I keep asking over and over again is, can you guys tell me, you know, where's the organization? What kind of organization is this? Where's its headquarters? How much do they charge for membership? How do you become a member? All of these questions that involve, you know, being a member of a so-called international or national domestic terrorist group, I guess is what he called it. These are questions I'm asking, and it seems like a lot of the red hats really can't answer that question for me, never mind elected officials who are just tying themselves in pretzels trying to figure out how to explain it.
Now, the other part is he's authorized full force. I know what full force means to me, but when you're talking about the most powerful military on the planet, with lots of toys that most of us have no access to, and fortunately our police departments don't have access to, how full of full force?
I think that's an excellent question, because what kind of domestic laws are there whenever it comes to drones and some of the technology that is so new that we haven't actually created laws around it yet? Like, is what kind of domestic surveillance is happening? How are they justifying warrantless wiretaps by saying that, you know, this is a terrorist group, thus I must, you know, wiretap some, you know, man bun kid in Portland. I don't know, and none of us knows this. None of this is public information. God forbid this administration offer any kind of transparency. Yeah.
No, I'm like, you know, I hope they're tapping my phones. Maybe they'll learn something. I don't know. This is one of those weird kind of situations, because I don't have an Antifa membership card. To be honest, I probably would, because I don't think we should have fascists in this country. So I would position myself as an anti-fascist. I don't consider myself a domestic terrorist. But if I read this truth properly, those of us who don't want fascism in our country are the enemy. And these are, so anyone that doesn't agree with fascism, if I'm getting this right, if I'm reading the words right, then we're, anyone who isn't fascist is a terrorist.
Pretty much. I mean, that's honestly
okay, so,
what
so I'm
saying.
Not the only one. So you're here with me.
That's how I interpreted it. In all honesty, though, I don't think he even knows what Antifa means. Like, I would give anything for a reporter to ask him questions like, you know, how do you define Antifa? Just at the very base of it, what is Antifa? Define what that is. And I feel like the only answer he would give is, oh, it's a terrorist group.
That's terrorist. But
what do they do?
But you know, here's the weird thing. And like I said, you know, I'm not a fascist, and I don't think anyone should be. But you look at what this administration is doing, fairly fascistic. I look at the former FBI director. Trump put out a social thing, and our attorney general goes, okay, let's go. Now we have a weaponized Department of Justice, the kind of weaponized Department of Justice that my red hat friends believed Obama was using. But I look at this. He never indicted a Republican FBI director. Now we have this indictment.
Yeah, this is bonkers. This is what I spent most of the end of last week looking into and asking some of the legal nerds about so that I could try and wrap my head around how exactly they're going to try and make this work in court. What we have found out is that to get an indictment, you have to go to a grand jury. They went to a grand jury in Virginia, even though this whole thing was about Comey testifying to Congress. So typically, whenever you lie to Congress, you would take that to a grand jury in Washington, D.C. I don't know if you've noticed lately, but every time Jeanine Pirro tries to go to a grand jury and get an indictment in D.C., she loses. So I wonder if they even tried it there, but they went to where Comey was speaking from over Zoom because this was in 2020 during the COVID lockdown.
Okay.
So they're like, well, he was in Virginia. Therefore, we're gonna try and impanel a grand jury in the Eastern District of Virginia. You have to have 12 grand jury members to indict somebody. They got 14. So already, like, we're talking about 60% of a grand jury. And I think, honestly, what folks have been saying is that the actual paperwork in the transcript, in the grand jury where they say what Comey said, if you listen to the actual comments that are on tape from him, it's completely different. Like the actual words they said he said, he didn't say.
Okay, they AI'd it. So AI gets a little glitchy. But let me ask a dumb question, because you know maybe I'm missing something here. If you lie to Congress, isn't that Congress's job to kind of hold you accountable? Is there no mechanism for when you go and you lie to Congress that they do this, not the president going, hey, I want you to go after this guy who I can't stand? I mean, because if he did lie and he did perjure himself, I want anyone who does that clearly held accountable. But this seems a little hanky.
It is. It's absolutely a little bit hanky. And I think, you know, I wonder if the reason that he's not having Congress deal with this is because that would mean he would have to call them back. And one of the major things that's been going on is Republicans have refused to come back to Congress because the second that they do, there's going to be votes, or at least the demand for votes about the Epstein files. Because again, that was one of the reasons that they left early, you know, for the August recess. And now they're just trying to avoid coming back to Washington.
Try to stay away, which is interesting that they're going home to their constituents. Who, I got to be honest, and this is where I give Red Hats credit, man. These are dogs with a bone. They're not letting go because their identity is stuck on this. They really believe we're going to get Bill Clinton. We're going to get Bill Gates. We're going to get all of the liberals. And?
That has been sort of this interesting thing to watch because the Oversight Committee Democrats, one of the things that they did is they subpoenaed the Epstein estate. And so some of that information is trickling in. I think they got something like 8,000 more pages of information from the estate last week. And so one of the things that the Oversight Committee Democrats did is they started posting, you know, some of the schedules, the flight logs, things like that, that have actual names on them. So they find names like Elon Musk, Peter Thiel, you know,
Donald
people
Trump.
That are huge. Well, they haven't found his name on those, okay, on what they released on Friday. But it was some names where people were just like, oh, wow. And what Republicans have been complaining about is this is stupid. Like, there are probably Democrat names in there, too. But you guys aren't releasing those documents. So you should release those. And it's like, wait a minute. You have those documents.
All of them.
So why don't you release them?
Exactly.
And it kind of is just like this dog chasing its tail with the Oversight Committee. The whole they put this out on Twitter, bless their hearts, and it was just a flood of people going, why don't you release them? You have a Twitter account, you have these documents.
Yep.
Go forth.
Yeah, Musk, you've got all this stuff. You're the one who's got all of our information. You're the one who downloaded every piece of information that we've got because of your Doge ferrets. I'm sure you've did he say he saw them?
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Is you're like, I thought you had this stuff. Like, why don't you drop this? Right? I mean, you've got all of our social security numbers in the cloud. Why not just post some of that in there too so we can browse it?
Jeez, it's crazy. But here's the thing. I mean, I think Comey is good at what he does. I think he's going to be fairly talented. I think any lawyer that he hires will far outclass the person who brought this. Because as I understand and help walk me through some of this, the person who's in charge of this has tried one, maybe two cases in her very long, beauty queen career.
Yeah, so this is really bad. The guy that was in the position as the AUSA, the assistant U.S. attorney, was like a Emil Bovey acolyte. Like, this was a hardcore Trumper guy, and he told the Justice Department, "Y'all don't have it. Like, this information you're sending me, like, there's no way that this is gonna make it through a grand jury. We can't take this to trial. You're never going to win." And they asked him to resign. And in his place was this woman who is, I guess, an insurance lawyer, who was hired for the job by going to Mar-a-Lago and dressing in a suit. And somehow Trump was just like, that one, I need that one to win my case against James Comey. And she has filed the grand jury documents, went to court. Apparently she stood on the wrong side of the room whenever she went into court.
Hold on. Dressing in a suit. Hold on. No, these are the people who tell me that they don't like transgender folk. That sounds a little weird to me.
Well,
a little,
I mean,
gender benderish.
God forbid she wear pants.
No, I mean, look, which side of the aisle are you talking about? Shouldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, think about who we're talking about here. I don't care. Wear whatever you want. But it seems odd that that's what he gravitated towards. Just throwing it out there. Finally, I got to, you being an Oklahoman, is it Oklahoman or Oklahomite?
Yeah. It's Oklahoman. I prefer Oklahomie.
Oklahomie. Okay. So you're an Oklahomie. I want to get your thoughts on Ryan Walters' resignation, because, earlier last week, we had talked about Ryan Walters a couple of times, bringing talking points turning points. I don't keep saying talking points.
I do the same thing.
Because it's the same stuff. But they're going to bring a chapter to every high school class in the entire state of Oklahoma. Got some pushback. He now, I guess, resigned, and now the head of some anti-union attack dog think tank thing. Of which he put out on social media that he was going to be liberals' worst nightmare. He said liberals with a liberal apostrophe S, worst nightmare is about to become true, which, I got to tell you should be very happy he's leaving. Wrong usage.
Yeah, again, bless his heart. The last thing that we heard about Ryan Walters is he was in a board meeting and had a video on behind him that had some sort of love scene or something. It was unclear if it was an adult video or if maybe it was just a rated R video. But essentially on Zoom, everybody who was watching his video saw this video running behind him. And what has happened it's maybe a month since that happened. Is Walters has just slowly gone downhill and become more of a joke. And I don't, he has claimed that this is all a witch hunt, obviously that the governor has had it out for him or something. But ultimately, like, this was a guy who we were expecting him to run for governor whenever Kevin Stitt's term was up. Like, this dude was about to be the Republican candidate for governor in Oklahoma. And now all of a sudden, he's just like, okay, peace out. And we're, it's all kind of like, wait, what?
Yeah, no,
what
he
just
got,
happened?
He got somebody's attention.
Like, they opened
a big checkbook for him, and he went, going to go attacking teachers. And that's what, you know, look, that's what all of this, I put all of the right wing into this, the Charlie Kirks of the world as well. They're all running to the billionaire checkbook. And as soon as they get a big enough check, they don't care about you. They don't care about the public. That guy certainly doesn't care about children. It was about, hey, how can I cash in? And he's cashed in. Good for him. That's where my
thought
is.
I wish that was the case for all of them, because then you could just have, you know, George Soros buy off every Republican in office and be like, okay, how much would it take for you to resign?
Well, good. Right, all I got to say is good. Bye. Sarah, as always, great stuff. Appreciate the time.
Thanks. Have a good rest of the week.
You as well. Sarah Burris, reporter, Raw Story. Check out the work she does there, rawstory.com. Going to take a quick break. Back after this.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A stretch of dry and unseasonably mild temps are ahead. Partly cloudy for tonight, a low in the mid-50s. And a mix of sun and clouds for tomorrow, a high in the mid-80s. More sunshine through the rest of the week, temps climb through the 80s. Currently, it's 66.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
You know what I'm a sucker for at a Chinese buffet?
Crab rangoons.
Yep. I'll have about four or five of those things.
And they have cocktail weenies, which is a nice delicacy at the Chinese buffet.
You know, I'm trying to think of a buffet I went to that had cocktail weenies.
Who's eating that?
I don't know.
Even if you have a gourmet recipe at home, you're not making cocktail weenies. You're certainly not eating them when you go to the Chinese buffet.
Yeah.
Kind of weird.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Thursday last week, the story was that Trump was moving on the Bureau of Prisons, I believe, to end their collective bargaining agreement for all federal prison workers. The executive order from March did kind of the same thing for all government employees in intelligence and the national security areas. And the argument was, I guess the court said, you know, he can do these things, you know, under the guise of national security. And I'm curious how this fall of national security with the Bureau of Prisons. I don't know. Anyway, the Federal Bureau of Prisons director, this William K. Marshall III, evidently he wrote a letter to the nearly 35,000 employees, basically outlining how their contract is now worthless. The one that was negotiated by the Council of Prison Locals. And one of the folks that I go to talk about all things federal prisons, government employees, my good friend Phil Glover. Phil is the National Vice President, District 3 of AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. Phil, thanks for taking time for us.
Sure, Rick. Thank you for having us on.
So walk me through what's going on here. Let's start with the first question. I don't know how this has anything to do with national security, because I thought the firings were okayed by the courts. It's a national security issue. We give deference to the president in national security realms. Is this part of that?
Yeah, we're not really sure when they made this decision. I mean, other contracts, we lost the VA and some of the others back in March. BOP had been left alone, pretty much. They did have their dues deduction stopped earlier on, but as the summer has gone by, apparently this director either was told by Pam Bondi to cut the contract off, or someone even higher up like President Trump said, no, cut the contract off. And so, the 25th of September, a memo came out by the director to our council president telling her that all of this would be shut down.
And my mind goes, to what aim? Because it's my understanding, and obviously you know your members a lot better than I do, Republicans haven't gone after law enforcement. They haven't gone after corrections officers because, you know, that segment of the union population, fiercely loyal to their unions, but also fiercely loyal to the Republican Party, where even Scott Walker back in 2011 said, no, we're going to go after those unions, just not the police and the fire and those folks. And even Trump himself early on, you know, cut them out, carved them out. This seems like a curious move that I think only can hurt them.
Yeah, if you look at where prisons are across the country, many of them are in central areas of states that, like in Pennsylvania, we have a large concentration of them in the Allenwood and Lewisburg area. We've got them up in Canaan, PA. You know, and if you look, most of them are in rural areas, most of these standalone prisons. And they were put there, many of them were put there in the 90s by Republican members of Congress. They wanted jobs. They wanted good jobs for their constituents. And so, you know, that's what this is. And politically, most of our corrections workers align with a more conservative party. So it's really hard to understand why they're doing this. It's certainly they're hurting their own base.
Right.
And, you know, we have seen some backlash from our members about, you know, calling Republicans and asking why they're doing this to them.
Because they can, I guess, is the reason why. But here's the thing, you know, look, I've been a union member for a long time, and I know people complain about their work all the time and, you know, complain about the conditions and the people that they work for, people they work with. But one of the phrases I always came up with was, well, if you think this is bad, imagine if you didn't have a union and a contract, how much worse it would be. So, I look at this and I go, you know, OK, maybe there's some problem, maybe. But, yeah, this gets bad for the workers, doesn't it?
This is a game changer for work inside of our federal prisons. I started in the federal prison system in 1990. We had a very weak, very limited contract. You would come to work and the supervisors would pick you like a baseball team. You're going to work on evening shift with me and you're going to have Thursdays off. You're going to have Wednesday, Thursday off, Glover. Let's go. And I'm like, I don't want to work evenings. You know, that's not good for my, well, we don't care about that. You're working evenings. We had investigations on staff all the time. We had health and safety issues with radios not working properly, not enough body alarms at the time. There were a bunch of issues that had come up when I started in the Bureau. And I got involved in the union in like the first year of my employment because of those things. And we worked over the years to have a contract that you could be proud of and that would take care of people. And that's what we did. And that's what they have right now. And we're not going to agree that this memo that he sent out is legal. Obviously, we're going to fight this. There will be probably a national grievance filed over it and pushed to arbitration. I think it'll be included into some of the court actions that AFG is dealing with right now at the Ninth Circuit. And it just doesn't make sense. The Bureau of Prisons has had recognition in the federal sector since 1962, since John F. Kennedy's executive order granting recognition to federal employees. The Bureau of Prisons has had a council. That's how long. And so coming in there now and saying this is national security and, you know, and think about it. You had Alcatraz then. You had Marion then. You had some very, very high security facilities, Leavenworth, Lewisburg. And to say now that, oh, you can't have collective bargaining for national security in a prison is just ridiculous on its face.
Is it me or, you know, the reason for this is kind of important for me, and nobody knows the absolute reason, but it seems from where I sit that this is simply just political payback. This is just AFGE backed Kamala Harris. Trump is very unhappy about it. They've said not great things about Trump. And this is just pure ego-driven sore behind kind of punishment and retribution. After all, he did say he was going to be the retribution president. Do you see another reason for this, especially going after the Bureau of Prisons?
Well, again, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. He exempted the Border Patrol from this. They got up on stage with him. They made the rounds with him. They actively supported him for president. So they have been, and you would think that's a real national security agency there. Bureau of Prisons just didn't really get involved in it. That, our council never really played very heavily in the political politics of the presidential races. They might play at the congressional level, but they really didn't get involved much with the national level. You didn't hear endorsements coming out from the Council of Prison Locals board for president. There just wasn't a lot of that. There's a mix of employees there, and they never really actively did much of anything. And so where the retribution is coming from for these folks, I'm not sure that's where it's coming from, is for that. I think, number one, I think a number of Trump's political allies have been in federal prisons. I think that's something.
Okay.
You know, I personally feel that, you know, between Navarro and Bannon and the rest of them that have served some time in a federal prison, maybe, you know, some of that is rubbing off on our BOP employees right now. And, you know, I think that I do think, you know, the Bureau of Prisons Council is our third largest union within AFGE. VA is number one. TSA was number two, and BOP's three. And so I think they are trying to find ways to hurt our national union as well. But again, these employees are not really in the political world much, and they're more conservative, as you said from the beginning.
So let me ask you this, because, you know, it's like I hear teachers talk about the want for their contract and about their teaching conditions, their employment conditions, our children's learning and conditions. The work conditions that people, the corrections officers in the Bureau of Prison are going to have to endure are the same conditions that the people who are inmates there. And you want to hope that one of them is going to make things better instead of making things worse. So my question is by basically taking the gloves off management to abuse the workforce, you know, maybe with staffing shortages, maybe with, you know, as you said, equipment that isn't working, are we not creating an environment of things not being safe, not just for the corrections officers, but also for the inmates? And I know nobody cares about the inmates, but, you know, this is just it seems like a bad idea all the way around.
Well, I mean, look, you want the inmate population deserves fairness. They deserve good conditions. You know, 95% of inmates come back out to the communities. So, you know, we're not in there trying to abuse anybody. I mean, when I worked there, you did your job and you followed the policies as they were laid out. But if the workforce is being hammered constantly, if you're under investigation constantly, if you don't have the right equipment, and believe me, we fought for those things. After the murder of Eric Williams in 2013, we finally got pepper spray into the hands of corrections officers, and it has been much safer. We got stab vests. These are worn to protect staff after having a guy stabbed 130 times in a housing unit. He was by himself in a high security prison. We fought for two officers in each unit in those high security prisons. This is stuff the union fought for. And so, you know, to say this director, that memo he wrote, I read that thing, I almost threw up, because the management fought us tooth and nail on every health and safety item we've ever tried to put in because they wouldn't spend the money. They did not want to spend the money. And I, you know, flat out, as a retired member from there, I'm going to speak out a lot about this with Mr. Marshall, and he'll hear from me.
And that's the hope, because look, you know, I want everybody to be safe in this. And I know that if you have a collective bargaining agreement, I know there are rules in place that management just can't, you know, well, we're going to do things differently today. That's when bad things happen. Those rules are in place for a reason. Those things were negotiated for a reason. And so they should be there. So let me ask you, now that this has happened, this memo's gone on, this is, are the gloves off? Are prisons operating still along the same standards that they had? What are we anticipating? What are we seeing? Do we know anything yet?
We don't know a lot yet. We're only hearing bits and pieces about changes being made at the local level. We haven't seen a lot. I think everybody from last week to this week, we're waiting to see what's going to happen here. I anticipate that our roster processes will be destroyed and they will start to pick staff and put them where they want. And it'll go back to the good old system of, hey, I'm going to elevate this guy so I can get him promoted. That's exactly what happened in the 80s and 90s. Until we got a fair roster process in place. You're going to have issues with annual leave. Again, he put in this memo how, oh, none of this stuff's going to change. It's in civil service law. No, it isn't. A lot of these contract provisions have nothing. There's no basis in law for the roster process. And having a rep for an investigation. Inmates complain a lot. Inmates put a lot of complaints on staff. And they have to be investigated, and they are. But if you don't have a representative in there, then I hope every staff member goes out and gets a lawyer. I hope they have to start dealing with lawyers instead of union reps, because they're not going to like it. And it's going to cost them sooner or later down the road.
No, I mean, you know, again,
there's a reason we were put in place in 1978 in Title V to give us these rights. They know why. And so, you know, we're going to have to go after this very hard, fight this off, just like as we are in the other agencies as well. But this is a life or death thing here. This isn't, and I'm not making any, that's not a hyperbole. This is truly working in a federal prison. We have had guys murdered in Atwater since I worked there, Atlanta, Lompoc, California, Atwater, Canaan. You know, you've had guys murdered, and it's usually because of either not enough staff, not the right equipment, or you just have an inmate that's not been isolated the way they should. There's just, you know, something has gone terribly wrong.
Right. Or you start going down the list even further, you know, training and fatigue and a whole bunch of other things that we're just never. Not good. I do want to ask you about the whole push to just basically destroy your entire union. My friend David Borer says, you know, an injury to one is an injury to all. What is an injury to a million? Which is an interesting point because, you know, what is it? Almost a million of your members are affected by this?
Well, we don't obviously represent the whole federal government. There are other federal unions, but we are the largest. We have about 650 to 700,000 people that we represent overall. And what I would like to see is I would like to see the rest of labor feel the same way. I would like the rest of labor to say, hey, enough's enough, Mr. Trump, especially those ones, the trades, some of the private sector unions that, may have some influence with him. You know, the federal sector, you know, about 30% of the unions in the country now are out of the civil service sector, not private. So, you know, as we get hit, does that hit the AFL? Does it hit, the state feds? How much funding? Those kind of things,
right.
You know, work on the ground. I think everybody ought to be standing up and saying enough's enough here.
I did get a press release. I got a press release. Something.
Did you?
I'm not being facetious here. I'm not trying to make light of this, because I'm with you. I think there should be some kind of an angry response other than a press release.
Yeah. And maybe I'm not in a position to know what's happening at that level, but I can only say that I think, you know, the time for some statements in the press. We better get on the Hill. We better put more emphasis in the courts. We better do something different.
Or better put feet in the street. You know, at the end of the day, what I've been saying, eventually you're going to get to the point to where you don't have a choice. And I keep hearing people say, well, we're just keeping our powder dry. And the good thing about, you know, when it's over, you'll have dry powder.
Yeah, and your feet will be dry too, because you won't be out there marching in the rain. There is some talk about, you know, getting out in front of the Supreme Court building, doing some work there, maybe raising some issues with their shadow docket, because that's hurt us as well.
Right, I mean, but Phil,
that has hurt.
But Phil, this is where labor is supposed to be strongest in organizing. Yes. In bringing people together and fighting for better wages, hours, conditions. It seems like, you know, sadly, we're going to end up having to fight for the same things they fought for 100 years ago, just the right to be recognized. And I've got friends who are like, you know, good, we'll let the NLRA go and we'll just go on wildcat strikes when we want. I hear all of this stuff and I'm going, well, how about we start with, I don't know, protecting what you got and then moving forward.
Yeah, and unfortunately for us, I mean, That was one of the things we've had members ask us. Well, since they've dropped your recognition, can you strike? No, you can't. Federal employees, there's still a statute that covers federal workers not striking. And so, you know, even though they have taken the recognition illegally, doesn't mean you can just walk off the job.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's where a lot of times we have to partner up with other sectors to make our case. That's what happened during the government shutdown back in 2018, 35-day shutdown. We had help from the private sector folks, and the Central Labor Councils came out in force helping us across Pennsylvania. And we had to stay on the job, even though we weren't getting paid.
Yeah. No, so, let me add real quick before I let you go, because you brought up a shutdown, potentially another shutdown coming around the corner. Your member is going to probably get socked again. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, unfortunately, we see a shutdown coming. You know, they're all posturing to say who's to blame. Look, to me, who's to blame is not being adults. You know, the Republican Party's got all three, you know, the House, Senate, and the White House. Yes, they need 7 to 8 Democrats in the Senate to pass funding bills. Well, then you've got to negotiate. And I think when Schumer had control, they negotiated. They gave up some stuff to the Republican Party to keep government running. They cut the Hyde Amendment. They did all the different things that the Republicans wanted done on the extreme, and they got enough votes to keep the government running. And now Thune's acting like, oh, you know, this is unheard of. Their party's done this for years.
Yep.
So, you know, the adults need to get in the room,
amen,
figure this out.
There you go.
You know,
there you go.
That's what I'm—
Phil, as always, I appreciate the time. I wish you guys the best. I wish safety and health for all of your members, especially in this uncertain time. And I can't wait to hear back again on how this turns out.
Thanks, Rick. I appreciate your help.
Thanks so much. Phil Glover, AFGE District 3 National Vice President. Check out their work, afge.org. Want to hear your thoughts. Is this a good thing? Is this what we should be allowing? I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1789. That was the day that the United States Congress officially created the United States Army. Not everyone agreed that the U.S. should have a standing army. 2 years earlier, at the meeting that drafted the U.S. Constitution, James Madison warned against a permanent federal army. He told those at the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, quote, "A standing military force with an overgrown executive will not long be safe companions to liberty." Since Madison was a strong proponent of a centralized federal government, his caution about the army was noteworthy. Perhaps these warnings is why it took Congress until the last day of their session to finally approve the measure. In fact, President George Washington had to write Congress not once, but twice to get them to act on the issue. Once it was approved, the first standing army had about 800 members. By comparison, in 2015, the army had just under a half a million active duty soldiers. To supplement the small army, Congress also made a provision for the president to call up troops from state militias. The stated purpose for such call-ups was, quote, protecting the inhabitants of the frontiers of the United States from hostile incursions of the Indians. While in federal service, the state militias were supposed to receive, quote, the same as the pay and substance as the regular army. One time, various state militias were used for the forced removal of the Cherokee people from the southeast on the Trail of Tears in the 1830s. State militias were also deployed to break up labor strikes, such as the case in the Homestead Strike in Pennsylvania in 1892. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I gotta tell you, after talking with Phil, it's just mind-blowing that this is what the Trump folks are doing. I mean, stripping collective bargaining rights from corrections officers in the federal Bureau of Prison, it isn't just stupid. It's reckless, it's dangerous, it's downright deadly. These officers already work in one of the hardest and most dangerous jobs in this country, walking into overcrowded, understaffed facilities every single day, facing violence, facing stress, facing trauma that politicians don't... Look, it's not even that they don't understand. It's that they don't care. Trump could care less about these people. And I keep coming back to this. These are politicians. These are quote-unquote leaders who do not care about you, me, or anyone else. And taking their collective bargaining rights away, it means taking away what is really the only voice that they have to demand safer working conditions, proper staffing levels, basic protections. Like Phil pointed out, the stab vests, the unions demanded those. Those weren't given by management, and it literally means the difference between going home alive at the end of the night or not. So let's be honest. When these corrections officers lose their rights, it's not just their lives that are at risk. Inmates' lives are at risk as well. And I know nobody really gives it, nobody cares, nobody wants to hear about it, but understand, inmates are citizens too. They're human beings just like anybody else. And cutting workers' rights inside already volatile prisons, really only going to escalate violence, chaos, death, destruction, misery. This isn't done for an idea of reform. This isn't done as even a cost-cutting measure. This is federal government sanctioned neglect masquerading as politics. And the reality is I keep coming back to this because I think it's the reality. Trump doesn't care about working people. Republicans don't care. Because look, I get you could go after AFGE because they had the audacity to tell their members to vote for the other person. And in the Machiavellian kind of politic that we're in right now, with a guy who's as thin-skinned and as red behind as anyone who's ever served in that office, I get going after your political enemy. But these folks, they voted for him. So everyone who's on the Trump train, loyal, you got to ask yourself, when does the loyalty run out? When does he turn his back on you? When do the cannons start firing inward? We're in an interesting moment because I thought this group's off limits. But look what they're doing. Why? Because they can. It's not going to stop here. It's going to go all across. And eventually, for my unions who are saying, oh, well, they're not coming after me now. You're on the list. He's got a list. want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program, podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Stephanie Officer. Top congressional leaders from both sides of the aisle met with President Trump at the White House today with no word of an agreement that would prevent a government shutdown this week. The Democrats want to see restored funding to the Affordable Care Act and Medicaid. Republicans say that was never on the table. Vice President J.D. Vance accused the Democrats of playing a dangerous game at this late stage.
You don't say the fact that you disagree about a particular tax provision is an excuse for shutting down the people's government and all the essential services that come along with it.
The Atlantic is churning out some very powerful and different hurricanes this season. One pair in particular has caught the eye of ABC's Ginger Z.
So it's so rare in the southwestern Atlantic to see two storms 600 miles apart, and they will dance around each other as Umberto turns west of Bermuda, and Imelda tomorrow starts to take that hard right turn toward Bermuda, which by Wednesday night will see impacts.
This is ABC News.